people ask me all the time, like, what's an EA? Like, I've never heard of an EA. I want a CPA. And I used to degrade my own profession and used to say, think of an enrolled agent like a baby CPA. And what I have now started saying that gets people's attention is, I am licensed by the Internal Revenue Service. A CPA is licensed by their state. And that gets people to kind of bat an eyelash and go, oh, you're licensed by the IRS? Why, yes, I am. So if you want somebody to do tax, that is what I am designed to do.
All right. I got a good name for you.
Go for it.
Licensed to tax.
Nice. Nice.
I could see you on a billboard in Florida wearing your Chanel pajamas, licensed to tax, with the gun.
Oh, man.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
The events and suggestions are not to be taken lightly. Children should not partake in the listening
of this podcast.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Jason Ackerman and Scott Scarano.
We're going to have a problem here.
That's beautiful. Welcome to our special guest, Adam Markowitz. I'm guessing I could say his name because he's a fellow Jew. I'm guessing I haven't asked him that yet.
You're good.
But that's just a guess. Three Jews, baby. Let's go.
Technically, I'm half Jewish.
Two and a half.
That would be two total, since I'm half as well.
See, we round up. So that's three. Well, welcome, Adam.
Thanks for having me, guys.
To the Sons of CPAs.
I love any podcast where I can cuss my ass off.
Perfect. That's definitely here. So let's start. Is it just you and your dad and one other person?
Yeah. We just expanded to a third this year. And my dad's given me probably he's trying to give me about 50, 60 hours a week. But in actuality, he's giving me about 10 good hours a week of work. So I'm doing pretty much, 85, 90% of the work. I earned an admin for the first time this year. Best thing that's happened in this business in a long, long time, because she's fantastic and has just helped me through so much of the day-to-day bullshit that none of us have time for anymore, right? We're worried about filing returns separately and HHS grants and all sorts of stupid shit. We don't have time to worry about going forward and collating tax returns and running down 8879s and all that type of stuff.
So your dad started, I'm guessing it was just him.
Yeah.
And you went to Florida State for music, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I went to Florida State for meteorology. I flunked out of calculus twice, and that was the end of me majoring in meteorology. And then the irony is I married a calculus teacher who went to UF, go figure. But yeah, Dad started this business back in 93, and he took every damn dime we had and then some, and bought this little dinky office in Leesburg. It was like a $70,000 office. It was just him. He schlepped about an hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes each way every day. Didn't care, thought it was great. And, he kind of cultivated the office. It grew kind of naturally. Never did a lick of advertising. Still to this day, I've maybe done $1,000 of advertising in the entire history of this business. We kind of hit a peak in the mid 2000s. Dad bought a second office at that point, much closer to his home. He brought a guy down from New York who he worked with. He did the rat race in New York City every day. Hated it. That's why he came down here. But anyway, he brought in this guy we worked with up there, and he was supposed to work for 5 years, and he only ended up working, I think it was two or two and a half. And so it's a good thing that I flunked out of college and pretty much ended up in the business, because I had nothing else I could do with my life. And boy, did Dad need some help.
This is Kanye Markowitz, the college dropout.
So basically you came to this out of, it was your last resort.
Yeah, I didn't drop out of college. I do have my degrees. The piece of paper is somewhere. I don't know where it is.
Well, as a fellow half Jew, I got kicked out of college too, but it wasn't because of my grades.
There you go.
Yeah, but you were entrepreneurial in college. It was different.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very entrepreneurial. My fraternity was right next to the pharmacy school. So you do the math.
Yeah, no, I wasn't doing any of that stuff, but Yes. I thought I was actually going to go into hotels, hotel management after college. I was working in hotels. I was doing night shift. I was doing night audit for some hotels. And I remember I was making $11 an hour at the time. And I went to the owners of the place and I said, listen, I'll stay. I'm happy to stay after graduation. I love it here, but I got to start paying my own rent. I don't have any scholarship money. I got to make $12.50 an hour. And they told me they couldn't afford it. Best thing that ever happened to me was them telling me they couldn't give me an extra $1.50 an hour.
So then you're like, hey, I'm going to go work with my dad. How did you broach the subject?
Yeah. So I literally picked up the phone. I'm walking down by the stadium one day and I'm maybe 4 or 5 weeks from graduation. And I literally just called up my dad and said, dad, I'm coming home to work for the business. And I'm now like every Jewish father's dream, right? Stepping into the family business. But it was a strange conversation because it was always designed to be very, very short term. I was never supposed to stay in this business. I moved home. I moved back in with my parents. I figured I'll do this for a year, maybe a couple of years, and then just go find something else. In fact, after about a year, I went to Robert Half. I was trying to get placed somewhere as an accountant. That's how badly I wanted to get out of the business. I was just going to get placed somewhere to go work.
Wait, why did you want to get out of the business?
I didn't think I was making like, dad was paying me like $100 a day. Like I just wasn't making any money. And the business really wasn't in a point at that point that it could afford the debt that it still had from when my dad bought the second business in Castleberry, along with, we were a one income household. So it was only my dad. My mom hasn't earned a paycheck since 1986. So, you know, it was just hard to both take care of me and take care of him. So what I did when I decided, I went on my Robert Half interview and I decided this wasn't for me either. I ramped up some sports writing that I was doing. And I did that for a while. I was doing sports writing in college. You know, Scott, you got into the whole, you know, selling drugs thing. I was into sports gambling.
Yes.
And it was a miserable, miserable crutch for a college kid who thought he knew a lot more about sports than he did. So I, you know, lost a ton of money in sports gambling. I made a lot of money in the end in sports gambling when I figured out what the hell I was doing. But in my early college years, I didn't know what the hell I was doing and I was losing money left and right. But I found a guy's name is Mike Rose, and he was kind of addicted to the sports gambling thing, for lack of better terms, too. And somebody asked him at an online sports book to pen an article for him. You know a little bit about gambling, so go ahead and write something on it for me and we'll publish it. And that was the start of his business. Well, I'd known Mike for, geez, probably 7, 8 years before that. And he said to me, hey, you can write. Do you want to make some money on the side? And that's how I started doing that. And by probably, let's see, I graduated in 07. So probably in the middle of 08, maybe early 09, I was making about $60,000, $70,000 a year writing on sports gambling. It was great. Like, I didn't give a shit about accounting at that point. I showed up because dad wanted me to. That's when I really ramped up after I went to the Robert Half interview. And I'm like, I don't want to wear a suit the rest of my fucking life. I'm like, that's not for me. Like, I know y'all can't see this, listen to this, but I'm wearing fucking pajamas right now. I don't care. It's just kind of how I roll. So
honestly, you look too nice.
Yeah.
You look too nice. You could dress down.
Yeah. I just give no shits though. Like you're not paying me because I'm dressed in a suit. You're paying me because I've got a good brain on my shoulders. But,
Scott's about 3 days away from wearing a velour pajama.
Perfect.
Suit is what it sounds like.
So this is sex, sports, and stimulants. I was into the stimulants in college. Adam's got the sports, and Ackerman was having sex all through college.
Me? I wish. So while you were so what were you doing at the firm while you were sports writing?
As little as possible. No, I was doing kind of entry-level bookkeeping and payroll. We had one particular client that we did everything for on a day-to-day basis. We paid all of his bills. All of his bills got sent to our office. We paid them. We did his payroll. We did his financial statements. We did his staff complications. If they had any staff complications, we worked with their managers on site to try to get them through things. So I was basically just working with that client and just doing some easy shit. I didn't touch a tax return for the first time until probably 5, 6 years into my time at the business. I had no education on it. It was just a matter of whatever I learned in the real world. I sure as shit wasn't ready to tackle the Internal Revenue Code yet.
So for context, annually, how many tax returns do you do?
So we'll probably do a tick short of 700 between 1040s and entity returns. And I'll probably do about 600 of them.
I don't think we've had any one individual on that has done that many tax returns. I don't even think I've done that many tax returns in my life.
They keep telling me it's a shitload of returns. Yeah, I sit there and I go, is it really a shitload of returns? Like, I guess it is. I've just never thought of it like that. We had never done 400 1040s before 2020. And like I said, we could come pretty close to 600 this year. All 600 of them ain't going to get done by April 18. No way in hell.
So for somebody that claims to have not done any advertising, that's a pretty large client base, and I beg to differ. You have a large following on Twitter. You spend a lot of your time puttering around on there. I'm pretty sure that that's considered advertising in a way, don't you think? Like, don't you have almost 10,000 followers? Like right now, how many followers do you have?
I was going to say, I've got around 9,000 or so. I don't know where the hell they all came from. I don't know why they're all interested. I don't know why you guys are interested in me. But
I don't know either. Scott butchered you, so.
I don't know why Scott reached out to me. I don't think I'm particularly interesting, but I guess some people do think I'm interesting.
No, you're definitely interesting. You're a marketing person. You're a writer, like, disguised as an accountant.
I guess so.
So when did you decide, hey, like, I want to take this accounting stuff seriously?
Yeah. I met the woman who's now my wife in 2012. In 2010. We got married in 2012. And at the time that we met, I was gung-ho. I was going to do sports writing, and that was going to be my career. And I was just kind of hanging on to this accounting thing because I had this one client that I really liked dealing with, and Dad needed me. So this was more a convenience to Dad than anything else. I did it for a couple of years, and I realized that I was sick and tired of driving out to Tampa every Friday night for something, or going to something at the Amway, you know, every Friday or Saturday night. And I realized I wanted to have more time on my hands. So I made the gross calculation and went, oh, if I do taxes, I'm going to have so much more time on my hands than if I do writing. And we see how well that shit worked out. But that was the premise of it. The other thing that happened that really scared the shit out of me is UIGEA became law. And UIGEA was the United Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. And that passed during the Obama administration. I believe it was his first term. And when the day that passed, almost half of my business went away because
that was when online poker, you had to you couldn't do that.
Yeah. That was when NetTeller went away and it was impossible to get anything out to like Doyle's Room or any of those, you know, those online poker and online gambling sites. It just became impossible for Americans. And as a result, most of the online sports books that were paying me were like, I don't know if we're going to have US clients anymore. So if we don't have US clients, we don't need to write on US sports. It was a scary, scary time. And it was a reality that this shit could go sideways at any point. So in lieu of that, I said to my dad, I remember I drove out to his house in 2013. This was a year after that when I finally made the decision. I just got married. I'd been married a year at that point. And I said, Dad, I want to buy in. And he didn't know what to say. It came out of nowhere to him. He didn't really expect that. But I just decided one day that this is what I was going to do. And I had probably done maybe 20 tax returns in my life before, and I probably fucked half of them up, including a couple of my own that I fucked up. I had a stretch of like 5 straight years I had to amend my own tax return because I fucked it up. But I went to Dad one day and said, Dad, I want to buy in. And you could tell like in that moment, Dad was like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. He always thought that he would just kind of age out and phase out and just kind of close the business and that would be it. But now, I mean, he still gets to work. He would never be able to keep a business at this point, if not for me floating around. So, you know, he probably would have had to either shut down the business or sell the business in 2019 or certainly 2020. He wouldn't have lived to tell about 2020. And now he can hang on as long as I let him, pretty much. You know, I'm going to buy him out this year in all likelihood, maybe next year. But, you know, if he wants to work 10 hours a week and wants to go vacation for 30 weeks a year, great. Go for it, Dad. And he realized it was just like the greatest thing that happened to him. So that's kind of the story. And I just wanted to make sure I was a good provider. I wanted to be, you know, I didn't know if I was going to become a dad at that point. You know, my wife and I decided not to have kids, but I always wanted to be a good provider. And even if I was going to make a little less money, which I did at the time, just death and taxes, right? I don't know how long this online gambling thing was going to stick around. I do know how long taxes are going to stick around.
So when you, when you have this buy-in discussion, mm-hmm. how did you structure the buy-in?
So Dad and I had an agreement on one piece of paper, front and back. And basically what this said is I was going to buy him out of 49% of the business. If I ever became a CPA, give me the other 1%. Because in Florida, you know, name of our business, Howard L. Markowitz, PA, CPA. I can own 49% of it. I can't own 50% of it because I'm an enrolled agent. The agreement was very simple. Something happens to him, I buy out my mom. Or something happens to me, he buys out my wife. I agree to keep my mom on health insurance until she reaches Medicare age, regardless as to what happens. And that was it. And we never talked about what responsibilities what, were going to be.
But how'd you value the business?
1x of revenue at that point.
Okay.
We just didn't care. It was an irrelevant number to me. It was an irrelevant number to him. When we go to the money, like
when you did the 49%, did you write him a check then? Did you get a loan? How did you structure that?
Yeah, I gave him a dinky down payment, and the agreement that we were going to have was that any distributions that came out, we set salaries, and any distributions that we were going to take after that were all going to go to my dad to be used to pay off my loan. Well, my mom won't listen to this, so I could say this. So my mother became a pain in my fucking ass and reminded me every 2 seconds that I still owed her money. So eventually what I did is I refinanced my house and I paid them off. That took about 9 months before I got pissed off and just
sounds
did
like
that.
A good Jewish mom.
She's not Jewish.
I had over under 3.5 months. Oh, that's the surprising part. I had over under three and a half months. So yeah. 9 months was a little long.
Yeah. So my mom gave me the Jewish mother's guilt trip, the Jewish Catholic mother's guilt trip about the thing. And I just got so pissed off about hearing it. I literally refinanced my house. I was paying my dad nothing in interest, volunteered to pay interest on my house to tell my mom. And that was the end of that.
So in Florida, do you still have to have a CPA to have the name change like that?
So I'm going to have to, the whole thing is going to get rebranded probably this year at some point.
And what are you going to rebrand it to?
I don't know what the hell we're going to call it yet. I've become very invested in my community. I am very, very invested in the small business community here. I'm very invested, particularly the minority business community here, and trying to promote good equality and making sure that there's opportunities for one and all. I'm going to go with something local to me here. Don't know exactly what that is yet. I've got a guy who's started to help me with the process, but I want to be identified locally more. And if I take on national clients, great. But ultimately, I want to be able to be known in my neck of the woods. And the one thing I'll promise you, the name Markowitz ain't going to be in there anywhere. I want this business to be a lot bigger than me, and I want this business to live on a lot longer than me.
Going to call it the Adam Project?
Florida Man LLC?
Yeah, some shit like that. I don't know. AJ Campo and I have always joked that the name of the firm should be Shitbag Preparers LLC. So, you know, we'll see. But it's, you know, we joke about being... We must be the idiots in the whole thing with all the, everybody tells us, oh, well, it's not how my other accountant did it. Well, it's like, maybe there's a reason they're your other accountant, right?
I love that. That's my favorite.
Oh yeah.
So it sounds like it's basically just you, your dad a little bit, you hired an admin.
Yep.
So what is where do you see the progression going as far as hiring people and growing the firm?
Yeah. So I'm super stoked about what's next. I have an 18-year goal, and my 18-year goal is ultimately...
That's a good Jewish number.
Yes. Yes. It's a number. It happens to be coincidence that it's a good Jewish number, but it's a good Jewish number. I am ultimately going to have two different either branches of my business or two different businesses. The for-profit side, and I want to open a Vita branch. I actually want to open a couple of Vita branches in a couple of the areas.
Wait, what's a Vita branch?
The volunteer income tax. Preparers.
Okay.
I really want to do that because I have recognized just how ridiculously underserved some of the areas around here are. And I want to be able to go there and reach out to those people and go, here, I'm going to help you now. You know, I'll tell you a quick story about it. There's an area inside Orlando, but kind of on the outskirts of Orlando. It's called Pine Hills. And you can throw a baseball in any direction from Pine Hills and find a ton of money. But Pine Hills is what most people would just refer to as the other side of the railroad tracks. Crime is significantly higher there than anywhere else in the metro Orlando area. And it's just, it's a town that gets a ridiculously bad rap. So I was in there back in maybe October of 2021 for whatever week, National Entrepreneurial Week. is. And I did a talk out there. And as I'm driving through Pine Hills, I'm recognized a couple of things. First thing I recognize is when you go into Pine Hills, the sign says, "Welcome to Pine Hills, a safe and diverse place to live." And I said, well, who in the fuck decided that the word safe and diverse needed to be on their sign? It's not a diverse place. It's predominantly Black. But as you go down the main drag there, the second thing I realize is every goddamn traffic light, every single last one of them has a red light cam. Now, I live in Windermere, and Windermere is probably one of the three or four ritziest zip codes in Florida.
That's where Tiger Woods lives.
Yeah, for Tiger. I live 2 miles from Tiger Woods. So I wonder, like, why? I think there's only one red light camera in my town. Why is there one in my town and every fucking light in Pine Hills has a red light camera? So, and as I talked to some of the people there, I realized that these aren't bad people. These are great people who have great ideas. And there's significantly more small business actually going on there than there is in Windermere, Dr. Phillips, or any of the other major, you know, zip codes around Central Florida, because you don't have big chains there. You know, you have McDonald's, you have Burger King, but you don't have Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. You don't have even banks. You only have a couple banks there. And every single tax firm is either an H&R Block, a Jackson Hewitt, or someplace that says tax with bars on the door. So how the fuck do we think we're going to help these people when we don't offer them any help? So I'm super passionate about getting to those people in that place and a couple of the other adjacent areas around this neck of the woods, and giving them a place that they can go walk into, that they could talk to me or somebody who really knows what they're doing, and not just do their taxes, but really kind of get them on the straight and narrow with their business. You know, if they're worried about retirement or succession or whatever it is they're worried about with their finances, to be able to do that for them. Now, I'm not there yet, right? But I'm 36 years old. I got plenty of time left in my career. You know, I'm about to be the 100% owner of about a $600,000 accounting firm. What am I going to need? At some point, I'm going to have enough. So then it's how am I going to give back? And ultimately, it's going to be hiring people who otherwise would have no opportunities and teaching them a real career that they can really, you know, do something with them, with their lives in. That's how we're going to help the community. And if I get bigger than that, and I can reach out beyond Orlando, phenomenal. But, you know, I'm really, really super passionate about what goes on around this neck of the woods. And it's going to do two things, right? It's three-dimensional chess, because it's going to be something that's awesome for the community, and it will give me more notoriety, and more people will be like, hey, I want to work with that guy. It's more about helping than anything else, but I recognize there's a greater financial end game to this as well.
So you're taking some big swings here, both sides of the spectrum, right? It's like almost like you're not messing with the middle. Seems like a great plan. So why 18 years?
I just think it's going to take that long is what it kind of boils down to. I just set it as a goal, as a 2040 goal.
So you would be 50?
I'd be 54 at that point. And theoretically, independently wealthy enough that if I never made a dime again, I'd be fine.
I actually just learned that 18 was a thing this weekend. I did a lot of Adam studying. I watched The Adam Project on Netflix. It was all right. It wasn't that good. And I've been watching We Crashed with Adam Newman. Adam Newman, that's another good Adam. Guy who founded WeWork. So with one of his first deals, the guy had 18 cents, and that was like his trademark or something that, I don't know, the guy he was doing the deal with, something like that. It was like $18.18. So it's not a question. I just was pointing that out and adding a little pop culture there. And a little plug for Apple TV. God, I love that Apple TV Plus.
We have an 18-minute plan, and that's for Apple to sponsor us.
Are you into guerrilla marketing? Is that the Twitter thing, the guerrilla marketing?
Yeah. You know what I mean? So yes, but I don't know what that looks like yet. I'm big in my Chamber of Commerce. I sit on the board of my Chamber of Commerce. I'm going to join the community council in Pine Hills. It's going to be more about being the walking advertisement than it is the tangible, here's a billboard or here's a newspaper or whatever. But there will definitely be some element of.
I can see you on a billboard.
I can see you doing a billboard.
I don't want my face anywhere near any of that shit. I don't mind being a walking billboard.
On a park bench.
Ugh, yeah, no, not my jam.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't even like my logo. I don't like the name of my business. I don't like anything about the aesthetics of my business. My dad's a vintage black and white guy. We didn't even have a logo until 20, when I bought in, 2014. That's when I said, Dab, we need a logo. Why do we need a logo? I haven't had a logo all these years. Why do we need a logo?
You don't like anything about your business, but do you like yourself, Adam? Do you love yourself?
Oh, I love where I'm going. I love where I'm going in life. I'm on a journey, man. I'm on a journey. We're going
to. Okay. You love where you're going. Do you love where you are? Do you love where you are right now?
For some context, because I don't know when this is going to air, but it is March 21st right now. Does any accountant love themselves on March 21st? Does any tax preparer love themselves on March 21st? Yeah, no, I do love what I do. I wish I was more efficient at it. I wish I maybe had a little bit less of it at times, but I love what I do, and I love the new version of me every day. I like every day more than the previous version. That's my goal. Every day when I go to bed, I want to like this version of me better than yesterday's version of me.
1% better every day. It's compounding interest right there, definitely. So you're a small firm, but you use Carbon. Segue into the Carbon ad. Cue up Carbon ad.
As the poster boy of Carbon,
Ackerman's claim to fame is...
I'm the poster boy for Carbon. When Carbon needs to close a deal with a bigger firm, they call me in to sell it. And what do I tell them when these firms talk with me? I'm like, we couldn't live without Carbon. It saves us so much time.
Because Carbon is the collaborative practice management platform for accounting firms. It brings your team, clients, systems, and data together in one place, significantly improving visibility, efficiency, connectivity, no matter where your people are located. See, the thing about this is, I have the power to really talk about the ad because I love the product. They're the backbone of our firm. If you look at Carbon's logo,
they're the heart of the house.
Not the heart. No, Practice Admission is the heart. Carbon is the skeleton of our firm. If you look at their logo, it's black with white on
top. What's the dick?
It looks like a skeleton. What's the dick? You are the dick of the firm. Carbon is the backbone. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Did this just get explicit?
To my operation. I don't know. Like, this is an explicit ad, but honestly, Carbon fits that though. They have their logo looks like explicit content, you know, parental advisory. Like when you look at that black and white and you see that black and white color scheme, you think Carbon. I mean, do I love branding? Their branding is the best branding. And then if they throw in a little bit of pink, like pop in there, that would take it over the edge. Like Carbon is on.
Look,
Killer Carbon.
Listen, I'm the poster boy. Carbon. Call me the closer at Carbon.
The closer.
I close
Ooh, the closer at Carbon.
Now, do I get any money for that?
Closer
no.
with a K.
But when I go to San Francisco, they take me out to dinner. So in a way, I'm getting paid. Always be closing.
Getting paid, baby. And we got paid to read this. Getting paid by Carbon.
Yeah. Carbon.
HQ.
HQ.com.
Thank you, everybody.
That's beautiful.
So I always hear from everybody that it's too expensive. It's a pretty pricey product for you to be using for just three people, right? So tell us a little bit about that journey. How'd you get into that? Why are you using Carbon?
It's Tax Twitter's fault. I like Carbon. I do. I really like Carbon. I don't think I've even scratched the surface of what I should be doing with Carbon. We just started with Carbon in October of 2021. So we've only had it for 6 months. This is our first tax season. It's keeping me on task. Triage gives me a heart attack, and I think that's what it's designed for. But no, I like the way that program keeps things organized and kind of keeps me on task, keeps my admin on tasks. Automators are absolutely the secret sauce of templates, and I need to get better at all that. So, you know, I look at it and I go, what am I spending, like $2,800 a year or something like that? I don't remember what I'm spending, but I look at it and I go, if it saves me 10 hours a year in just going back and looking for things and organizing things, or, you know, because I just ran my life off of Excel before this, if it saves me 10 hours of tax season, it's well worth it.
So what I want to know, what are the arguments that you and your dad have gotten into?
I can safely
like a
say
lot.
My father and I have gotten into one serious argument in the 15 years I've been doing this. That's it. Just one. And it was overpaying me. And it's because he wanted to give me more money and I told him no. So I got married in June of 2012. And a couple of days after I got married, I was telling you earlier about the big client that I had that we did everything for. We paid their bills. We did all this stuff. Well, this was a guy who owned at the time 5 dental offices. And he had an on-site manager who oversaw the whole thing. Well, she passed away in her late 40s, all of a sudden, like 2 days after my wedding. And I called up my client, guy's name is Jim Costello. And I said, Dr. C, here's what I will promise you. You won't sink. Whatever I got to do, we'll keep you above water. If you need me to be there, I'll be there. If you need me to, whatever you need me to do, I'll take care of it. I don't know what the hell it's going to cost you, but I know we'll take care of it. And we settled on some, I don't even remember what the number was, but we settled on some number. And Dad said to me that he wanted to give me that differential of money. And I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is what I feel like I have to do. That was probably the biggest fight we've gotten into. Now when we fight over shit, it's Dad, you fucked this up on this tax return. Like, come on, man.
That's so lame. Oh, man. For 15 years, you're working with your dad, and that's the only fight? Oh, come on. I know that.
Yeah, there's got to be things that, like, you obviously see the benefit of marketing, mm-hmm. and he might not. What are some things that you maybe have not agreed upon?
Oh, he hated
modernizing
handled,
the firm.
Yeah, he hated how I handled PPP. Absolutely despised how I handled it. Didn't charge anybody a cent. He didn't like how I handled it, not because I didn't charge anybody a cent. That's not what he was upset about. What he was upset about is the fact that I literally shut the firm down from third week of March through like the end of May before I started doing anything again. I wouldn't do financial statements. I was doing the bare minimums, payroll, sales taxes, payroll taxes, and everything else got put on hold. As soon as they extended April 15 to July 15 that year, everything just went on stop. And I got everybody every cent I could find them for PPPs and employee retention credits and local grants and all that stuff. He was upset that I basically stopped the firm.
Well, maybe you weren't doing financial statements or taxes, but you were definitely on Twitter. I know that was probably your prime growth time of growing your Twitter following, right?
I had like 700 Twitter followers at that point or something like that. And they all came back from my old sports writing days. It's Kelly Erb's fault that I'm on tax Twitter. It's her. It's tax girl's fault. She used hashtag tax Twitter one day. What the hell is this?
Okay, wait. Explain to me what happens on tax Twitter.
Oh, we just bitch and moan about everything.
Okay.
What are you kidding? There's nothing actually productive going on tax Twitter. No, that's not true.
No, what I gathered in the 3 months that I've been poking around on there is it's a community. It's a safe space. There's a lot of connectedness, a lot of community.
Tax Twitter, it's an enormous community. There's probably a good...
Would you say that Scott is the mayor now since he's been there for 3 months? Or
no.
He's working out...
No, you already had the mayor on when you had Jason on. Jason's the mayor of Tax Twitter. He's a good dude. I like Jason's stats a lot. He's a really good dude.
Talk about Tax Twitter, though, from your perspective.
Tax Twitter is an all-encompassing tax community because so many of us... there's a ton of sole practitioners on there or small firm practitioners. I never met anybody who just got it. You know, I live with my wife. I don't have any kids or anything like that, but it doesn't matter where I go. Nobody gets the drain of March 21st, right? Except for those people on tax Twitter. So we can all commiserate with each other. You know, we ripped through the CARES Act in a couple hours. We knew everything that was in the CARES Act between all of us that were reading through it. You know, it's just a great place for stumbling across information you didn't know, or if you don't know something, asking the question, somebody's going to know the answer. Y'all have a chance to talk to Andrea over in Hawaii. She's fantastic. You should have her on here too. But I had a client who reverse snowbirds, where he spends some of his year in Florida, but he lives in Hawaii and he's got this business in Hawaii. And I'm like, I don't know shit about Hawaii. So I, you know, hit up Andrea and she's like, oh yeah, all you need to do is, and a 5-minute conversation with her, and I now know everything I need to know about Hawaii. So I can go back to this guy and be like, yeah, I'm an expert in Hawaiian tax now, which is bullshit, but I know if I need something, I can go back to Andrea and go, hey, Andrea, what the hell do I need to know about your crazy state? So it's such a great community for all the little things, because it'd be fucking impossible for any of us to know all of it. Outside of like, Ed Zollers. Ed Zollers knows everything there is to know. Glenn Birnbaum knows everything there is to know. But the rest of us on there who are mere mortals.
Sounds like you're just making up Jewish names. And
no, these are guys. Though. Yeah, these are definitely guys. Everybody else on there, we're all just mere mortals. So I know about Florida tangible property tax returns. Anybody else out there who's in, you know, Iowa or Arizona or Montana or whatever, do they know about Florida tangible property tax returns when they have somebody move a business down into Florida? So they don't ask me about it. Gives us access to anything we need. I mean, outside of Alaska, I think we got somebody in every other state. I don't know that we've met anybody in Alaska. Somebody's going to know the answer to that question. The brain dump on employee retention credit, on all the shit involving the PPP with what's the threshold for covered employees and all non-payroll costs and all these things, we were digesting that so much faster because of Tax Twitter than we ever would have on our own. It's impossible on our own. I'll tell you, I sat there to the first in-person continuing ed that I've done since COVID was last December. And they were talking about the employee retention credit and how it changed. And now it's 70% of a credit instead of 50% of a credit. And it's one, you know, per quarter and not for the year. And I'm sitting here in this room and all these people are like wide-eyed like this. And they're like, whoa, that's a lot of money that could be out there. And I'm thinking to myself, I've already done like $1.5 million of these things. And you're just getting onto this now? Really? But it's a Tax Twitter community. It's 100% that community.
I just got to MySpace, so it's going to be a few years till I get to Twitter.
You're with my dad.
But
my dad still thinks Facebook is called MySpace.
We just friended. So I'll get there on Tax Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, you absolutely should. Tax Twitter is good fun. If nothing else, man, there's some hilarious, hilarious motherfuckers on there. Just some absolutely hilarious folks. Like I said, Jason's like the mayor.
How many people would you say are on Tax Twitter? Like on there and then maybe like actually on there on a regular basis?
I don't know. Probably at least 1,000, I think. Probably 300 or 400, I would say, on a regular basis.
That's pretty good. And it's like you basically have created your own community, whereas, you know, the old people would use the AICPA or your state society or something.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us how you really feel, though.
Yeah, right. Hey, not my organization. I'm in the NAEA, so.
NAEA represent. I'm just saying I'm also in NAEA, or I think I was. I think my membership lapsed. But so what would you say is your firm? Is it a CPA firm now? Is it a tax preparation unit? What do you guys call yourselves?
We are a CPA firm at the moment. We are going to become... I need to find the right word or term that we're going to use, but I think the term is going to be something in the neck of the words of tax advisors that we're going to go to. People ask me all the time, like, what's an EA? Like, I've never heard of an EA. I want a CPA. And I used to degrade my own profession and used to say, think of an enrolled agent like a baby CPA. And what I have now started saying that gets people's attention is, I am licensed by the Internal Revenue Service. A CPA is licensed by their state. And that gets people to kind of bat an eyelash and go, oh, you're licensed by the IRS? Why, yes, I am. So if you want somebody to do tax, that is what I am designed to do. A CPA, you know, only a percentage of them actually do tax. And there's so many other things that they can or would be doing.
All right. I got a good name for you.
Go for it.
Licensed to tax.
Nice.
And James Bond thing, you know?
Nice.
I could see you on a billboard in Florida wearing your Chanel pajamas, licensed to tax with the gun.
Oh, man.
You can use that if you want.
I'm going to have to give you guys royalties at that point if that's what you go with, right?
You know that's going to go up in Raleigh in about 10 minutes. Yeah, there's going to be a billboard in Raleigh. So. Right.
And it'll be Adam, too. And it'll be on the on 40 going down Florida.
I'll get in the tux and I'll see if I can give it a good look. I don't know. Yeah, so that's kind of, I really want to make a conscious effort with the rebrand to accomplish a couple things. Number one, I don't want to be thought of as a factory. There's a lot of my clients are kind of the get them in, get them out variety, which there's a place for that. There's a place for that. And there's a place in my heart for that too, because so many of those tax returns, I can kick out the door in 15, 20 minutes, gone. Like, I've done my part here. Giovanna, you deal with getting it out to them and collecting signatures. And doing
how much do you charge for a touch turn like that?
So our minimum fee for existing clients is $200. For new clients, $250. For just a basic 1040.
And what's a base at 1040 for you?
A couple source documents. Generally, you know, W-2s, maybe some interest. Yeah, I don't have to deal with state returns. I mean, I do state returns for a lot of people, but not for, don't touch any damn state for $200, that's for sure. You know.
And what's the tax software you use?
I use Drake.
And, okay, people love Drake.
People either love Drake or hate Drake.
People love Drake or Kanye. It's one or the other. They love Drake or Kanye.
Right, one or the other, not both. Let me know when Kanye buys out, like, CCH or something.
This is a great idea that we're having, which is we need a TAT software called Kanye.
That's what we're going to do. It's going to be cloud-based. It's going to be cloud-based.
Yeah, Was your dad always using Drake? How did you start using Drake? Yeah. Have you looked at other softwares?
Yeah, no. So we started Drake way back at the beginning. Dad's been using Drake since 93.
He was in diapers in 93.
I don't know the story of how he got into Drake, but...
He's not that old.
But Drake is, Drake's pretty old.
Drake's pretty old.
They're actually based out of North Carolina. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, they're based in North Carolina. Yeah.
What's,
I'm pretty sure we started with Drake. We've been using Drake for
Do you have some sort of hosting platform that you use, or you just do it on your computer?
Just on my computer. We're so far behind with technology. It's not even funny. We brought in our first server in 2015, and the thing got a virus within the first like 3 weeks of us having it. We sent it to the tech guy fixed it, brought it back to us. Like 2 weeks later, we had a virus again, and Dad's like, take the fucking thing, throw it out the window, I don't ever want to see it again. So I've got it.
Does he actually curse? Yes. Like that, or
yeah. Oh yeah, okay. That's where I get it from, him. Oh yeah, no, I am my dad's son, absolutely. So you stick 30 years on this face, you've got my father pretty much.
So is there any technology that you're looking to change that you know you want to change?
Yeah, I think we're gonna go full cloud based once Dad's out of the picture. I gotta get Dad out of the picture first, because I don't want to, I'm afraid he's gonna fuck it up, tell you the truth. So I don't want to be working on a tax file and go, you know, hey Dad, I've been working on this file for like 4 days. How come it's not here anymore? Oh, I think I overwrote that. Sorry. I could just hear that. And that would then become the second major fight that we ever had in the history of our business. No, we're definitely going to go more cloud-based as time goes on. I have a horrible confession to make with my general ledger software. I use EasyAct for my general ledger software, which is a program that exists. It is an Intuit product. The version of it I use is 0304. And I still do manual entry into my general ledger.
Wait, 1903?
No.
Or what?
2003, 2004.
That's the equivalent of 1903.
The equivalent of 1903.
You're manually entering.
Why?
Shit.
It's double entry accounting, but it's ugly.
But it's, why? Why?
Because I just haven't changed. That's why. Because I just haven't changed. I don't know shit about QuickBooks. I'll be the first to tell you that. I know enough about QuickBooks to be dangerous and to go around it and to do my journal entries that I need to do on people's QBO and all that.
Yeah, well, yeah, just check out Xero.
I'm familiar with Xero. I know Xero, good friend of the program, obviously. Like,
wait, what are you using this trial balance software for?
I'm sorry?
What are you using it for?
Producing financial
schedule C write-up.
Yeah.
You're doing it, right?
Yeah, I'm doing all the write-up for it. That's the biggest tech change that I need to make. It really is. I'll tell you why. I was against it for a long time. I was against what I called and always called push button accounting. I was against that for a long time because I'm not going to name the company, but there's a company down here in Florida who doesn't exist anymore, but prided itself on being a tech forward firm and wasn't particularly big firm in terms of people, was a big, big firm in terms of dollars. And they build like anywhere from $300 to like $3,000 a month for literally push button accounting. I'm going to set up all your stuff. It's going to come in. I'm going to look at the reconciliation, make sure it's all right, out the door, your financial statements go. And if you want to talk to me about it, I have to study your books first. And what pissed me off about that beyond belief was every time I got a client, it was, I came from XYZ accounting and I didn't feel like anybody knew anything about my business. And I felt like by doing the actual manual entry, even though it took more time and still takes more time, I have a lot better understanding about what the client has going on in their business. And it gives me the ability to have more intelligent conversations with them and to make more, you know, suggestions to them about what it is or answer whatever questions they may have about it. So I always, up until really about 2 years ago, I had that stigma. That's just how I was taught. Remember, I knew nothing about this industry until I came into it. I've still never taken a true formal class in accounting, finance, business in my entire, I never took a business class in my entire life. I learned the real world, right? So that, but that's why I always was so against the automated type bookkeeping.
So what changed your mind?
What changed my mind is time, really, more than anything else, which is probably what changed the mind of all of this in the first place. Now, my admin, who is phenomenal and is eager to learn and to do more than just admin, she's going to learn on my shitty 0304 software because I want her to understand what she's doing and not be taught, hey, we're going to push a button and everything's going to go into QuickBooks or Xero or Wave or whatever, and then we're going to spit it out to the clients. No, I need you to understand why you don't just book net payroll and say that that's your entry for payroll. You know, why you have to go back and make a real journal entry with gross wages and payroll tax expense and payroll tax liability, et cetera. So she's going to learn the hard way. Then I'll teach her the easy way. But I want to make sure that I am always, I want my firm to be accessible to clients to know when they get something from us that we know everything that's on it and we know everything about it. And we've asked any questions that we need. I always like the rules with Amazon, right? Somebody buys $1 billion worth of crap off of Amazon and they have 400 transactions in a month. It's going to be automatically coded to something, right? It's going to be automatically coded to supplies or office or whatever the hell the rules are set up. But that doesn't answer any questions for me. That doesn't tell me shit about the business. I need to go back to the client and go, okay, you spent $50,000 this month on Amazon. What the fuck is it that you bought? So I can learn, if nothing else. And if that means I have to do more manual work, great. I have to do more manual work. I would rather know than just trust what a computer is telling me, basically.
So I got another one. A to Z accounting. That's like on the Amazon, you know how they have the little smiley arrow from A to Z in Amazon? You could have Adam Markowitz and have that little smiley arrow from your A
to Z in Markowitz. There you go.
That's what we could do with your name. It's perfect.
Is that what you've been writing down the whole time? You've been scribbling the whole time. Now it made sense. I love this.
I need to hire you. What are we kidding? I don't need a marketing
guy. We're consultants,
guy.
Adam. You. Adam, you could pay us $50,000 and we will have that for you.
Great.
Done.
Great.
And you know what?
I'll do it for less.
But no. The government pays half. That's just it's a write-off. Baby.
Right. Right. Exactly. Right. Remember, I don't have any state taxes like you guys have.
Okay. Not quite half.
Yeah. We let our tourists pay our taxes for us for the most part.
All right. So you don't pay your taxes. You let the tourists do that. How about your cleaning in your office? Do you let your wife do that? Does she clean your own office for you?
Oh, no. This is my space.
Okay.
Yeah. This is my space and my responsibility. And whatever happens in here is my responsibility. For better or worse, usually for worse.
All right. Who does the cleaning at the house then?
Neither one of us.
Interesting.
No. So my wife's a vegan. I am far from it. So we pretty much eat on separate. Like she's a morning person. I hate mornings. So she's having breakfast at like 5:30 in the morning. And I'm basically just going to bed some nights during tax season. We're really not on the same schedule at all from that standpoint. So I'll be looking forward to getting back to that schedule, back to some schedule in May. You know, even if it's, you know, I'm eating lunch and she's eating dinner, that's perfectly fine.
Do you value your sleep, Adam?
I value sleep. I don't get enough of it. I am cognizant of the fact that I don't get enough of it. I am cognizant of the fact that I feel better when I get more of it. That's why I hired somebody. It's why I'm going to hire the next somebody.
All right. So this is my point. Like you're in control of all this. You are your own boss. You know, technically you have this 18-year plan, but you could plan around that, like, you can create a system, you can generate a great system for yourself and design everything around that, right? Like, you're in control of this whole thing.
Yeah, for me, 2020, I've basically been running this business since COVID shut everything down. Dad never read the CARES Act. He never read the FFCRA. He never read the Consolidated Appropriations Act. He never read ARPA. I've basically been doing it. 2020 was about helping everyone at whatever cost. Didn't matter what the cost was to me, physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever. Help everybody was all that mattered. 21 was about survival. 22 is about the last push of growth. So at the back end of this year, I can consolidate. I really want to get rid of probably 10 to 12% of my clientele.
How are you going to do that?
I want to fire them.
So just send them letters and say later.
I have raised my prices the last couple of years. I'm going to do it again, but I'm not, that's not how I want to weed people out. Because I don't want to inadvertently weed out people that I don't mean to weed out.
And just don't raise the prices on them.
Yeah. Like, I'm a straightforward guy. Like, I don't bullshit around with stuff. It was about the money for me up until 2020. And after 2020 happened, I don't need any more money.
It's about the money until it's not. I said that on the first episode. I've said it many times on this podcast. Ackerman argues with me, but that is it. It's about the money until it's not.
Yeah, that's a great line.
Scott's favorite.
No, it's not always about the money. I'm with you, Scott. It's not always about the money. It's next year. I will make less money in 2023 than I make in 2022. 2022 is going to be a banner year. I'm never going to have a year even close to it. 20 was by far my best year ever. Then 21 was by far my best year ever. 22.
Let's get some hard numbers.
So we hit in 20 when I went into 2020. I was having the first 2 months of tax season. I was having the easiest tax season I ever had. And I said, we're going to make $400,000 for the first time as a firm. And it was going to be great. And I was rocking and rolling. We ended up at about 380 because I lost 2 months of my life due to coronavirus. But the next year I went into 21 and said, we're going to make 450 this year. Like, and my dad said, you're crazy. We can't do 450 of work by ourselves. I said, watch me. And we ended up landing last year at about 460. And I left probably about 60,000 bucks worth of work on the table that could have been done that dragged into 22. And I said, this year, 500's the dead floor. And we may touch six. It'll be close this year. I think we'll land probably in the 550 to 575 range this year. I will intentionally be dropping back to about five at that point. And if I pick up more clients that want to work with the program and, you know, they're willing to pay me bigger fees to do, you know, whatever it is that I got to do for them, great. And maybe we do get back there. Maybe I'm underestimating what's going to happen next tax season. But if I could settle into six, I could bring on two more people at that point. You know, dad retires. I got a bunch of more money to play with at that point. I can bring comfortably two more people in, maybe even three more people in. You know, my wife has an uncle who's a CPA up in Massachusetts, and he's going to semi-retire and come down here the end of this year. He's going to do some taxes for me this year, so that's going to help out a lot. So I like where we're going, but next year is going to be more about consolidation and making sure that, you know, they say that 80% of your problems are caused by 20% of your people. I want to get rid of the 20% of the people causing 80% of my problems. And then I can figure out how to grow from there and be more selective of who I work with and what I work with at that point. You know, I sent out a big letter at the start of tax season and said, this is where we're going. And I have a video that goes out to all of my clients at the end of this, explaining to them where we're headed, that we're headed to a firm that is going to be less about me and it's going to be more about the community. It's going to be about giving back to, I'm really passionate about marching band. I was a high school marching band dork. You know, I've raised, geez, probably up near 30,000 bucks now for my old high school marching band. And we're going to start an initiative probably, I said I was going to do it this year. And I still may retroactively go back and do it this year, but you know, we're going to give $10.40 to some high school level program at one of the local schools for every 1040 that we do. Things like that. Things that actually tangibly really do make a difference.
What about 1120 for all the 1120s?
Yeah, sure. Sure, I'll give $10.65 for every partnership. Great.
Yeah. 1041s.
I don't do that.
990s.
I don't do any 941s. I don't do any nonprofit work. So I do very little. I think I have like 2 trusts in the entire book. I don't particularly like trust work. So I farm out my trust work. I have somebody who's here locally to me who loves doing trust work, and I'm like, all yours. You want it, more power to you.
So go out and buy one of those big checks, right? The sweepstakes checks, and walk into the high school with their big check from the Adam Markowitz.
In the tuxedo with the little gun.
Yeah, with the little gun, exactly.
It's gonna look awesome.
So yeah, no, that's where I'm going. And it's just, if I find staff that buys into that, everybody else will buy in. Because if I find the staff that wants to be, and maybe it's not band they're passionate about, maybe it's something else, but you know, somebody who wants to be attached to the community locally here. And like I said, if I get bigger and I can reach out to other communities, great. I would love to do that. I've got a guy right now in Nashville who's opening a coffee shop in the middle of like the hood in Nashville. And he's opening up a high end coffee shop at less than Starbucks prices, because he thinks that his community, his little inner city in Nashville, needs it. So he said, fuck it, I'm going to do it myself. And he bought a building, and he's in the process right now of putting in a high end coffee shop that is going to be staffed by, you know, people who live in the community, who probably don't have opportunities that are anywhere near as good as that. He's committed to basically putting all the money back into not just the business, but to the staff, so the staff can make more money. And I look at that model and I go, that's what I want to do. You know, I want to be able to touch somebody's life and to be able to really make a real difference. I don't have any kids. So my business, these my clients, even though most of them are double my age, they're my kids. They really are.
I love that.
So you took over for your dad. Who's going to take over for you if you don't have kids?
That's where I hope that I will just be able to find the next set of people. You know, I don't intend on stopping at 3, 4, 5 employees. I don't know what the ceiling is, but I intend on getting, you know, these, especially if I get kids that are like, maybe like community college kids who just maybe don't really have a great opportunity, hungry to learn and hungry to grow for a purpose. Even if it's not my purpose, have a purpose and want to stick with that and want to build a career and want to build. I would love to have somebody, you know, one of the guys I interviewed for the position that I ended up hiring, super, super passionate about 990s and nonprofit accounting. And he's studying for a CPA, and he's going to make a phenomenal, phenomenal CPA. Bright kid, at everything I ever could have wanted, aside from the fact that I don't think he wanted to do admin work. He wanted to do 990 work. I don't have any 990s in my book of business. Zero. So it wasn't a fit from that standpoint. But if I could get somebody who's willing to go out there and go build that side of a business and be passionate about it and really, like, really deeply care about it, great. Go do it. You know, I am all for that. I will, you know, I may go into financial planning one day. You know, I thought seriously about getting a CFP. I still may get a CFP one day, mostly because I think most financial advisors are the scum of the earth.
I agree.
Listen.
They mostly are.
You're better than mortgage brokers and underwriters, all right?
I'm a CFP. I don't do investment advising. I'm on your side.
Cool.
Most of them are idiots.
Good. So yeah, I'm looking to grow with people who have passion more than education.
I'd love to sell you an annuity right now, though.
Of course, I'm sure you would love to sell me an annuity. The next thing you're going to sell me is some fucking universal life policy, right?
Well, that's going to be attached to the annuity.
Gotcha.
So I get
7%. That's going to be the rider in the annuity. Gotcha.
Yeah, I have to pay for my trip with Scott to Pinehurst, so
yeah,
I need to sell you a policy there.
Right.
Okay. Before we end, I love everything. I love kind of how you love your community and built the not for profit, or you want to do that. I think that's very cool. So tell us. So you,
Vitawitz, VITA, like the volunteer, like the all caps VITA, Wits.
Scott, we have to charge him for this. Don't just give it for free.
Man.
Don't just give this gold for free.
Jesus Christ, that's man. You guys are good. You guys are really good. I got a lot of thinking to do now, man. Voits, I like.
He's just the sidekick.
Shout out to Adam's mom, who's not going to listen, but she might listen. So yeah. We appreciate what you did.
Yeah.
No, okay.
I promise your mom's not going to listen, but that's okay.
It's okay. My parents refuse to listen.
Dad will listen. Now he may tell mom, and that may get me in deep shit. But dad may listen. Mom ain't going to listen.
Okay. Tell us give someone advice if they are starting their own firm or taking over a sole proprietor. Give them a piece of advice from what you've learned over the last 14 years.
Work your ass off. Work your ass off and love it, right? You gotta love the grind. I built my business. Now I'm going to show you as a visual, not that's going to do you any good on your podcast. I'm holding up my cell phone. I built my business with my cell phone by being there for people, by, you know, answering their questions, whether they were directly related to what I was getting paid for or not. If I didn't know the answer or couldn't or wasn't, you know, licensed to have the answer, to go find the people who have the answer. Just be there for people and just treat people the way you want to be treated. The very first lesson I ever got in accounting, and this is on my website and will stay with me forever. The first lesson my dad ever gave me on day one, sat me down in the office. I sat across the table from him and he said, the first rule of accounting is you treat the person on the other side of the table like they're your grandmother. Everything else will be fine. Everything else will be fine. You'll learn whatever else you need to learn. You'll deal with whatever else you need to deal with. Everything else is education and money. You can always learn more. You can always make more money. You can't learn to be a nice guy. So treat the person on the other side of the table as if they were your grandmother. And I am a firm believer that when you do that, good things are going to happen. You're going to run into assholes who just don't give a shit, but you get rid of those people and you deal with the people who appreciate you for that. Because then they're not paying you for doing taxes, or they're not paying you for doing bookkeeping, or they're not paying you for doing payroll. They're paying you because they want to do business with you, because they're rooting for you, because you treat them right. And that would probably be the best. Anybody can be successful in any business if they just listen to that and just treat people the way that they would want their grandmother to be treated.
Sorry, Adam Markowitz, fantastic advice.
No charge for that one. That one's
no
free.
Charge.
That
was on that's house. Free.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining the podcast.
Always.
Hopefully,
so much.
Hopefully,
fun.
I'll definitely be bringing my child down to Disney. And Scott brings his children all the time. So
I got the fireworks are right back there. I have the Magic Kingdom fireworks every night in my backyard.
Oh, all right. So is this the kind of thing like living near the airport? You kind of tune it out after a while. Is that like? Do you tune it out after a while? Is not like you get this every night.
No, you know what? It's still nice on a nightly basis, especially cool. Since we went like a year and a half without it. It's true. Still nice to walk outside at night and go, oh, the fireworks are going off.
Okay. Last one. Magic Markowitz with a whole bunch of fireworks going on in the background and you're wearing Mickey Mouse ears.
No. Yeah, that won't.
Magic Markowitz.
That one we're not doing.
Yes.
That
yes,
one
I
we
love
are
it.
Definitely not doing.
I love it. I love
One more.
Adam,
good.
So much fun, guys. Anytime. I'm thrilled anytime.